So this month, we're talking about family because we have Thanksgiving come around the corner. And depending on your family, it can be awkward, it can be tense, it can be loud. It can be like we're just not talking about that. So we're looking at some of our very first families through the story of Genesis. And I wanted to start with the Genesis family timeline because last Sunday as we were discussing things, it occurred to me not everyone is familiar with the order of events in Genesis. And I'm not going through all of Genesis, just some of the big major parts. So first we have Adam and Eve. Then you have Cain and Abel, the flood with Noah. Then you have blessing through Abraham and Sarah. Isaac becomes the child of promise. Then you have Jacob and Esau and the 12 tribes of Israel with Joseph. And I don't know why that one went long. But you'll notice that there are some common sins that are happening. So like God creates the world, sin enters the world. We have denial, blame, shame, and deception. Then with Cain and Abel, we have jealousy and murder, denial and anger. The flood, the Bible just says great wickedness, right? Then we have blessing with Abraham and Sarah, and there was doubt, blame, deception, all of that happening there. Child of promise was Isaac. Lots of favoritism there. And then the deceiver, because Jacob's name literally means deceiver, and Esau. And then we're going to talk about Joseph, the 12 tribes of Israel. There's actually a lot of other stories. We're only going to look at Joseph's. But we have favoritism, deception, attempted murder, and slavery. So we've got lots of sin in these families, and some of you might see some of these sins in your families, right? Maybe there's a lot of denial of past wrongs, or a lot of blame, favoritism, deception, right? Anger, whatever, like, those things are unfortunately normal. They are normal. And so I just kind of wanted to go through, show you all, this is the trajectory. We talked about Adam and Eve, then we skipped down. Oh, no, we did. Sorry. We talked about Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel. Then we skipped down to Abraham and Sarah. We're skipping Jacob and Esau, and we're going straight to Joseph. So I just wanted to lay this out because we are skipping a lot of the stories, and we don't even get to all of the stories that we have to tell you about Abraham or whatnot. All right. Next up. Oh, right. I messed it up.
Because I clicked another button.
Yes, you did.
Well, plus two, I think, because this was important to me. I didn't.
Yes, and part of the reason I did this because I was like, oh, right, you're probably not the only one who's like, I need this laid out.
Right, yeah, and there's a block of time between each of these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Adam and Eve, then Cain and Abel, then Noah, like
no, yeah, yeah,
the,
yeah,
yeah. You know.
We don't know the time frame of Genesis 1 through 11. So, like, that's like the flood, Adam and Eve, the Tower of Babel, all of that.
So it could have been thousands of years.
Right.
Yeah, we don't have the Bible does not say this happened in this year, blah, blah, blah. We have a better idea of Abraham and stuff, which starts Genesis 12. And scholars pretty much typically agree that Genesis 1 through 11 is different than Genesis 12 through 50. And there are a lot of debates on how different and why it's different. But we do not know how long of a time period this was, right? These are all relatively close together. Because Abraham and Sarah give birth to Isaac. Rebecca gives birth to Jacob and Esau. And then you have Jacob has 12 sons. So, from various wives, from Leah and Rachel.
And one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that there's a whole other populations out there.
Yes.
During Adam to Noah. And you know what I mean? Before
mm-hmm.
Abraham. And that's something I did not comprehend until it came up.
Mm-hmm.
In a service, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't think about that. You think it's just Adam and Eve.
Right,
yeah.
and directly, and that's it. And I always thought it was sexual. It's like, sorry.
There you go. All right, so as we get started today, if you notice, one of the big themes is favoritism. Like, that's a big theme. So I want to give a chance. Go ahead and turn and talk to your neighbor. Have you ever felt like the least favorite or the most favorite in your family? Yeah, and I would argue that whether you're the least favorite or the most favorite, or perceived least favorite and perceived most favorite, right? Because some families, yes, they're, you know, like, families don't even hide it. Like, they're like, this is the favorite child. Other families, they're just kind of a perceived way, and it may not even be that way, you know? But, like, it's just different things because different kids need different things. And if you give everyone the same thing, it doesn't always work, right? Like, even though they all got the same thing, you like her better because this thing was for her. Like, you know, like.
And I don't want this thing.
Later children,
yes.
Because you have more experience.
Yes, yes, you have more experience. So there's like, there is both favoritism and perceived favoritism, but I would argue it doesn't matter where you fall, it is damaging. Favoritism is damaging, right? And so we're going to look at the story of Joseph and the damage that happens with favoritism. Anna, will you read this first portion?
Yes. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him.
I mean, that's relatable, right? When you see someone who's getting a favorite, you're like, I hate them. Doesn't matter, like, everybody loves them. And I was, like, a hipster before it was cool, because, like, when anything got popular, I was like, that must be trash. Like, I hated it just because it was popular. Like, I was like, and now I've come to realize that there are some things that are popular that are actually good, but I was just like, it's popular, that's for the masses, it's because you all are dumb. Like, that was just, I mean, I relate to that. Go ahead, Sarah.
This is the first time I ever noticed that he got his robe right after he tattled to his dad.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, so and here's a great thing. So as many times as I've heard the story of Joseph, I don't think that anyone ever has stopped and talked about and he brought their father a bad report about them.
Yeah.
Right? I was like, is this new? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't remember this ever. And I kind of got, I was like obsessed with this, right? Because I was like, what is happening here? So I went on a deep dive on the word bad, and then I went through a deep dive on the word report, because I was like, this, like, I don't know, Joseph is the youngest, and I can relate to that, because, like, I was a bit of a tattletale. I was like, you're doing it wrong. Mom, they're doing something wrong, right? Like, you know. Yes, right? I very much had that. So I was like, is he tattling on his brothers, or is he lying about his brothers, right? What kind of bad report do we have? And so I went into, and the word for bad here just means, like, it has a lot of connotations. It means wickedness, unfavorable, and all of that. And in the Septuagint, the Greek word that is translated bad, that they wrote, is pornania, where we get the word porn, which is immoral, bad, wicked, unfavorable. And I was like, I still don't know. Is this a bad report, right? Like, is this, you know, is this like, oh, they were really awful? Like, they're off doing terrible things? Or is this him lying? It wasn't until I looked up the word report that I found out that this bad report is the same bad report that the 10 spies of Israel gave in Numbers when they were told to go into the promised land. And they were like, oh no, they're going to kill us, so the land's bad, right? Where they came and lied about it. In Proverbs, the word gets translated as slander, right? So this isn't like a tattletale, okay? So like, the report is slanderous.
Oh.
Jacob is not reporting necessarily the
truth.
Joseph is not necessarily reporting the truth, right? He's bringing his dad a bad report. Right? And it's not necessarily a good report. It's not a not
true.
Yes, true. It's not a accurate report. It might have some accuracy. You know how, like, when you're, like, annoyed with someone, all of a sudden, like, we use hyperbole. Like, you know, Sarah might have poked me, and all of a sudden I'm like, Kelly, Sarah's hitting me! Make her stop! Right? And, like,
yes.
And I've blown it up. She beat me up! She took me down and beat me up. Yeah, and like, and you know, so like, I don't know if it's an exaggeration of what was happening. It doesn't really focus on this. But I think it's really important to, like, you know, because the Bible doesn't just let us know it was a bad report for no reason, right? And Joseph has always been portrayed to me throughout every time I've ever heard Joseph preach on as he was a good son. He was, you know, like, he didn't do anything wrong and da 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 da. That is not what Scripture says. Joseph, nobody in Scripture never says Joseph was an innocent little lamb who his brothers were mean to, right? Like, there was,
like, Reverend was right all along.
There was some definite sibling rivalry, right? And then here we have this ornate robe, right? And this is The words weren't ornate here. And when I was a kid and I would read this in my Bible, I was like, I don't even understand this. Because it's, you'll notice in your Bibles, it'll have a little, what's it called? Like, sub footnote, right? That you go down and look at. And it'll say, the Hebrew word for this word is uncertain, right? The meaning of this Hebrew word is uncertain. And I was always, as a kid, I was like, how could a word be uncertain? Like, we just look in the dictionary, right? Because I had no concept of translations and all of this. But we don't really know. We translate it ornate, you know, so there's the very famous musical, The Coat of Many Colors, right? Well, people have done lots of different things with this. Well, Dr. Gordon Heuberger, who I got to take a course with from Christ in, called Christ in the Old Testament, he argues that the robe, right, were symbols of inheritance, right? And the longer your robe was, the longer your inheritance was, the bigger your inheritance was. So essentially here, Jacob is promising a larger inheritance to Joseph. So this isn't like hidden favoritism, right? You know, this isn't, I'm giving you all the share, like my will divided by 12. This is, Jacob's getting more because I like him better than all of you all. Right? And we don't know if this started, like, if it's because he gave a bad report and he was like, oh, well, can't trust them, better give it to you, right? Or if it was just, you know, we do know that he loved Jacob more because he was born, Joseph more, because he was born in his old age. But there is definitely, yes.
Well, yeah, I was thinking, like, a lot of it probably had to do, like, I mean, we get, like, before this, we got all the drama with their mother.
Yes, and it is his favored wife.
I mean, also, Israel isn't exactly the most honest person in the world.
No, his name is Deceiver, and then God changes it to Israel. So Jacob is Israel, by the way, if I didn't say that. So Jacob, God renames as Israel, and all of that. But, right, so there's, like, some really big animosity here. It's not like Dad gave him a robe. Dad's promising him the family fortune. And I've seen enough, you know, rich family murder mysteries to know that when you promise someone the family fortune, they always end up dead. Right? This is when, if you watch a murder mystery and there's rich people, people are killed over the inheritance all the time. Right? That is just a standard plot. So, like, they hated him and could... What?
Knives out.
Yeah, knives out. They hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Right? And like, yeah, like, this isn't like, oh, you know, I think Dad maybe likes him. No, Dad is proclaiming that he's the best. And I hate
Why
him.
Can't you be more like Joseph?
Yes, right?
Or you'll never be as good as Joseph, you know?
So,
he's slandering, but also if you look at everything his brothers got into at other points in the story, like... I don't think it was that far from the truth.
No, it's probably not. I'm just saying. There's definitely... These are not innocent
people.
They
did try to murder him.
Yes. But so, like, my point here being is Joseph wasn't innocent, right? He wasn't just like, oh, you know how sometimes I think of Angelica.
I think the baby.
Yeah, I think of Angelica and Rugrats, who's, like, really mean to the babies and bosses them around. But when the adults come around, she's like, I'm the best princess ever, and I've never done anything wrong in my life. Right? That's kind of how the image I kind of get of, like, here of what's going on. So Joseph is not innocent in this. He's not some... I'm not saying he deserved what happened to him. I want to be clear. I'm just saying he's not some sacrificial lamb.
He's just a baby!
Alright, and then favoritism causes hatred. Right? And even scripture says at one point that God does not have favorites. Because, like, favoritism causes hatred. Right? That's what ends up happening. Like, my brothers have this whole perceived thing where, like, my brother always used to say that Jonathan, the eldest, was the good son. Oh, it's the good son. He's always the good son. Because there was this perceived, like, he's the eldest, people like him better, we love him, da-da-da-da. Not true, but, like, there was that, right? And it causes animosity between people. I know that there's been animosity because my brothers have perceived me as the favorite or of, quote-unquote, getting more. Right? Oh, you've gotten more from mom and dad because you're the youngest. Which happens all the time, right? That's normal. And it does. It creates animosity. And when favoritism is blatant, it's just flat out hatred. Flat out. All right, let's keep reading to see what ends up happening to Joseph and his friends. Jennifer, will you read?
What?
Read?
Me? Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they ate him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I have. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field, and suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brother said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind.
So when you think about this, this gives you a different perspective on Joseph, right?
Well, when you think about him not being innocent,
it gives you a different perspective, because I cannot tell you how many sermons I have gone to that have talked about Joseph and have used the line, "This is why you can't tell haters your dreams or your goals," right? Like, okay, so first off, the word dream here is not the same word as the English word. It can't also mean goal, right? It's not a, it is a, dream here can either mean a prophecy or just a dream you had at night. That's it. There is no, like, "This is my goal," right? There's no, like, "My goal is to, you know, reign over you." That is not what Joseph is saying. Too many people have used that to say, like, "Don't tell haters your goals," right? That's not what it's saying at all. In fact, modern psychology tells us that when you tell someone a goal, you are more likely to complete it because you are accountable. So I just wanted to point that out first. Not the same.
If you tell your hater, then you gotta prove it.
Yeah. Right? So first off, like, dream and goal are not the same. I want to make that clear, right? And there's someone missing in this story. Anyone see who's missing?
The wife, the mother.
No. I think someone said it.
God.
God. He doesn't say, "God gave me a dream." He said, "Listen to the dream I had." Joseph doesn't acknowledge God at all. Not even once. He doesn't say, "God gave me this dream." He's talking about, "I had this dream."
Right.
And, yes.
What if he didn't know?
He might not have known, but remember, Joseph has got, he's definitely got some arrogance to him. Like, he's someone who's like, "I've accepted that I'm the favorite, and I deserve to be the favorite." This isn't someone, like, whenever I felt like I was the favorite, I had a lot of guilt, right? Like, oh no. Like, you know, love needs to be spread. We all are loved. At times I felt like my life was so blessed that I felt like I was God's favorite, and then I felt really guilty, even though scripture says God has no favoritism, right? Like, so, like, you know, this is not
you
that.
You don't know you're God's favorite.
Like, this is not that, right? This is, "I am the favorite, and I deserve it." And I'm so, like, this is right after, right? Right after he gets an ornate robe. Right after his brothers are like, "We can't stand him." And then he's like, you know, because he's just so brilliant, he's like, "Let me tell you this dream I had." And there's nothing, like, this is very clearly a dream. Like, no one, they don't have a dream interpreter. No one needs to interpret this dream. No one asks God, "What does this dream mean?" Because he's very clearly, he's one of 12. It's like, "I'm going to reign over all of you." That's what he's saying. He's not saying God said this. He's not saying God's going to protect us all. God's going to use me. He's saying, "I had a dream, and I'm going to be the boss."
Twice,
right? I am awesome. Right? Like, you know, bow down to me. And even his father, Jacob, was like, "What is wrong with you?" Like, even though he's Jacob's favorite or Israel's favorite, depending on your translation or what you're looking at, same person, he's still like, "No, you know, you're getting a little too big for your britches, boy. Sit down. That's not how we do." But his father kept the matter in mind. And I think his father kept the matter in mind because Jacob has also had dreams. Jacob has also, he has actually talked to God. Right? He wrestled with God. So Jacob is aware that something is happening. Not sure what is happening, but he's thinking about it. But he's not going to, he probably wouldn't have rebuked him if he would have said, given some credit to God. You know, but he's just sitting over there like, "You are going to bow down to me." That is essentially what Jacob is saying. Or Joseph, I'm sorry, Joseph is saying. Too many J names. Joseph, go ahead.
I think it's kind of funny that Jacob's fine with the sheaves, but when you said sun, moon, and 11 stars.
Yes.
Me?
Yeah. I'm not bowing down to my son. Yeah. So, and there's just a lot here, right? And so, as I was studying this, like, it really occurred to me that Joseph was arrogant, right? This wasn't someone like, oh, God gave me a dream, and this is going to be awesome. This is, I had a dream. Let me tell you, and no credit to God, no credit to Yahweh. In fact, God never even comes from Joseph's lips, right? Not until much later with Joseph does he start talking about God. So when has arrogance or favoritism led you astray? So I will give an example, right? I was, in my younger years, a bit of a Pharisee in the sense of like, I don't do these things. I don't party in high school. I don't have sex. I'm not doing this, right? I am better than all of you humans, like, right? Like, and I was proud of it, too. I was definitely the Pharisee and the tax collector. I was a Pharisee, right? And I was like, I will never struggle with some of these sins, right, that you all are struggling with, you poor, poor people. I'm also like, yeah, it was just a mess. But then when I got to college, right, and I was an English major, I was assigned to read books that had very pornographic scenes in them, because some literature just has pornographic scenes in it, and that's
written down, it's not porn.
It's erotica. Erotica. Yes. Erotica. And all of a sudden, my body responded. And I was like, I want more of that. And I fell down this big hole of lust and like desire and things. And I was like, I laughed because I know God let it happen, because I sat there and was like, I'll never struggle with that. I'm good. Like, I am too holy for that nonsense. And whenever you start doing that, God's like, oh, you really want to play that game? Let me show you how weak you really are. So when has arrogance or favoritism led you astray?
I made a point to forget all of my problems.
I've never struggled with arrogance. Unlike
right? Humility is the quality I'm most proud of. Yes.
She was high-fiving.
Okay. I was thinking favoritism because, yeah, I was enough of the youngest and I was the last one and everything. I really, I have no doubt that I was a favorite of the family. But the thing is, you crave it. You crave to be everybody's favorite, you know? And so I feared losing the favoritism. So perhaps I, because I wanted to protect that, I was like everybody's, whatever anybody wanted, I wanted to do it for them, no matter what it was.
For sure.
So that would have led me astray.
Kelly, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I think that I don't think I felt like I was the favorite, but I definitely can see where, like, sometimes, like, I lose sight of, like, when you get a good grade and then you get praised for it?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I did that naturally, but once I got praised for it, I'm like, okay, so I just have to keep doing this and I keep getting praised,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Logistically,
yeah.
My brain was like, I'm a good student. I'm a good girl. Like, I'm going to get praised. And, I can totally see where, like, it's like, at first you're doing something naturally, but then you're doing it for another reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's the closest thing I can think of to being led astray. Because, like, you should do good things because your heart calls you to things, not because
Gotcha. Yeah, for sure. Luke?
Like, I feel like people pleasing and taking up more than I should, just overburdening myself with, like, taking, volunteering for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've definitely fallen into that trap. and definitely have had private jokes with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely similar to like what Kelly was talking about, like it kind of feeds into a self of like, ooh, I got a reward, therefore I want to do more, and it, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Alright, we're going to keep reading. I didn't put this on your sheet because the notes were just really long. So this is only up here. But Kelly, will you read this portion?
So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near.
Oh, sorry. I cut out just a little bit where it basically says that Jacob sent him out to go find his brothers, like go see what they're doing. Let me know if there is another bad report. Kind of thing. Not what it says, but you know. Anyway, there you go.
So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. That's first degree. That dreamer, they said to each other, come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that ferocious animals devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. Let's not take his life, he said. Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped off his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There wasn't any water in it.
Awesome. Thank you. So a couple things. Yes, it's first degree murder. They're like, I hate this guy. Like, you know, he's just... As soon as he comes up, they're like, they see him, and they're like, let's just kill him. Like,
kill him.
Yeah, all right, there's some very real hatred. And then here's really interesting. Here comes that dreamer. So I was looking at this, and there's actually, if you're getting into a very literal translation, it would be master of dreams or lord of dreams.
Ooh.
Right? So they clearly are acknowledging that there is something going on with Joseph's dream. Yeah.
Are you now? Does that mean master of dreams or master in his dreams?
It means master of dreams is what they're saying, right? Like, and they could be saying it sarcastically. We don't know. Most people translate it as dreamer. There are a few translations that will translate it as master or lord of dreams, but they could. They're like, you know what? Yeah, and I feel like there's a little bit of sarcasm there, then, because then they're like, well, then we'll see.
Bow down to him, the lord of dreams.
Yeah. Right. Like. you know, and then we'll see what comes of his dream, right? Like, okay, you think you're going to rule over us? Well, we'll just kill you, and then you'll try to rule over us.
I just had a vision of them mocking him by, like, they're actually harvesting, and they're just like, whoa.
Let your brother move, right? Yes. Right, and again, no, his dream, not God's dream, not God's dream that's sent to him. It's all about Joseph, right? Which is what gets Joseph in trouble. It's all about Joseph.
Reuben, great sandwich.
And then Reuben heard this and he tries to rescue them. And there's no, we don't hear that Reuben loves Joseph, right? We don't hear that. There's a part of me that's like.
He's just like, murder, not great.
Yeah, well, and I also think he's like, well, then maybe I can. I'm going to be the one to bring Joseph home. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, because Reuben is the firstborn. He's the one who's supposed to have the inheritance.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think. We don't know, but I imagine Reuben's got a little bit of, ooh, right?
I heard your story about how Dad got his inheritance for Coop. I'm sure cramming somebody's life is worth a little bit more than Coop.
Yeah, right? Exactly. He's like, I got a plan. Because his brothers hated him, right? We know that. There was no one like, Reuben, yeah, he's like, I'm going to try to rescue him. But he says to rescue him and take him back to his father. It wasn't to rescue him because he loved him or he cared about him. Specifically, I'm going to take him back. I'm going to be the favorite. Or at least the second favorite. Right? Maybe the favorite's out, right? And then...
The firefighters set the fire so that they can be a hero by putting it out.
Yeah, right? Yes. That's a great idea, right? And then they took his robe, his ornate robe, right? The robe that said he's getting the bigger inheritance. This robe that was very distinct, right? And they threw him into a cistern. And we have them, and then it says, as they sat down to eat their meal. And I have to just think a minute. Because I was like, you know, they're sitting there eating, and I'm wondering about Joseph and the cistern. Is he pleading for mercy? Is he screaming help? Is he red-faced and just yelling, how could you do this to me? Don't you know that I'm going to rule or whatever? Like, what is happening?
There's a chicken bone down there.
Yeah, right? Like, there's no, we don't know what Joseph is doing. Like, has he suddenly been like, oh, maybe I did this wrong. maybe I need to, like, think about this.
Yeah, I pushed a little too far.
Yeah, or is he just, like, you know, is he angry? Is he depressed? I can imagine them hearing him cry. And they're just eating, right? Like...
Imagine going through all 7 stages.
Oh, grief, yeah.
However many there are, it's just like going through.
Maybe he's concussed because they threw him
down.
Yeah, he's knocked out. We don't even know.
Yes.
And then they look up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites. Again, we have Ishmael showing up, like his son's coming out. Came from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. So they were like, oh, there's a caravan. Right? We see this caravan. Judah said to his brothers, and Judah, right? This is the line of Christ right here. Judah's the fourth one. Line of Christ. Talk about having a very human lineage. What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Right? What will we gain? I love that. You know, not, it would probably be wrong. Maybe not the most moral thing. But what will we gain if we do it? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother. Our own flesh and blood. And his brothers agreed.
So that sounds like Reuben managed a stay of execution, but they were still talking about it at lunch.
Yeah. Basically, yes. And they was like, you know what? I got an idea. Let's get a profit from this little butthead.
I definitely see, like, some level of, like, just, like, a little bit bad. Maybe we should,
yeah,
you know.
So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. 20 shekels of silver. 320 grams. You know how much that is worth today? $400.
Oh, wow.
$400. They sold him, and that's the high side. Right? There's a range, right? And I took the high side. They said, your life is worth $400 to us. And I'm sure Joseph was grateful to still be alive, but like, that was it, right? That's it. Like, you can't even buy an iPad for $400, let alone a computer. Most TVs, like the bigger ones, cost more money. Yes, you can buy knockoffs and things, but like, most, $400 is not that much money. Like, you can spend that in groceries in a week for a family of 6. Like, easy. So, they sold him for 20 shekels. And then when Reuben returned, because Reuben clearly at some point, the story doesn't tell us when Reuben left, but at some point Reuben left, turned to the cistern, saw that Joseph was not there. He tore his clothes, and he went back to his brothers and said, the boy isn't there. Where can I turn now? Not the boy isn't there. Poor, like, what happened to Joseph? Right? Everybody in this story is very self-focused. Where can I turn now? Right? Not, oh, wow, what happened to Joseph? Like, no. What am I going to do now? That was my plan. I was going to be the second favorite. I was moving forward. No, none of that. All right. So then they were like, well, we gotta stick to this, right? We can't tell Dad we sold him into slavery. So... They got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat.
Now it's conspiracy!
Yeah, right? And dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornate robe back to their father and said, we found this. Examine it to see whether it's your son's robe. So now we have a cover-up and, like, all of this. And, gosh, like, it feels like some of the murder mystery shows that I've watched or read, like, have just taken a lot of stuff from this story, right? We're going to kill you over the inheritance. We're not going to kill you, but we're going to make it look like you are dead. But you get it, like, a flood. Right? Like, there's all this, like, lots of deception, lying, murder, pretty much... Like, I've had some really, really awkward Thanksgiving conversations or fights, but I can safely say that no one has been sold into slavery, plotted to be murdered, or lied about saying, oh, they died, you're never going to see him again. So, and he recognized it. This is talking...
Kind of boring, thank you.
Yeah, you know, I thought I was having a heated argument. Anyway, he, being Jacob, recognized it and said, it is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. No, he said, I will continue and mourn until I, join my son in the grave. So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. So, I don't feel like they got what they wanted, right? Like, because now their dad has essentially just been, he's now depressed. All he does, like, Jacob is just, like, crying, useless, like, there's no one gets to be the favorite. No one gets to be anything because Jacob's not doing anything anymore. He's just crying. And then we find out later he gets really protective of his other son, Benjamin, who was born from his favored wife as well. But there's just, like, you know, there's no, like, oh, yeah, you can have this inheritance, you can have this, or, you know, I'll move on with my life. Because Jacob, like, you know, put all of his eggs in one basket, this is my favorite. This is my, you know, the one that I love. I've lost this one, I can't move on. And now, losing a child is very traumatic. I wanted, like, I, you know, have never experienced.
Period.
Yes. I have never experienced that. I can't speak from that, but I do know, like, there. He has a very real reason to grieve. I'm not saying that. But it's clear that he's not getting over this. He's not processing his grief. He's not trying. He's just like, my life is done. Like, that's it. And so, Joseph's arrogance led to his fall. Right? That's what we have here. Joseph is a great story of me, 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 me. I hate him. Let's kill him. Right? Like, that's, can't stand him. Right?
But his brothers also hated him because he was a tattletale, though.
He was a favorite
story.
Well, he wasn't just a tattletale. He was a liar. Like, yeah. he was like, I'm going to give a malicious report. And dad's going to give me the best thing, right? Like, so there is a lot that Joseph does here. Joseph was very manipulative, but his dad was manipulative. Like, you know, his dad manipulated Esau out of his inheritance. Right? And so there's these family lines, right? We see the same things happen in our families, right? From generation to generation. You look back and you will see the same sins in previous generations that you see now, right? There's this fascinating book, completely secular, called It Didn't Start With You. And it's all about generational trauma that repeats itself. And like some of it, as I was reading it, is like mind-blowing. So, like, for example, there was this one kid, he was 19-year-old, and he just started getting really cold all the time, and no doctor could figure it out, and didn't know what was going on, right? And he realized much later, I'm shortening the story, and this is just one example, but it was the most extreme in the book, and it was, like, stuck with me. But he would just, turn 19, he would freeze. Like, he just got so cold, and no one could figure out what was going on. He couldn't play baseball, he was failing, he didn't know what to do anymore. And through therapy and talking to his family, he learned that he had an uncle who died at 19, the day his cold, the freezing started, because he was lost in a snowstorm, and he froze to death. And, like, it's crazy. And I honestly think that was definitely, my belief is that was probably demonic, right? Like, but, like, those things kind of follow families. And it's just, it is crazy some of the stuff that happens, right? That, like, when you see, like, wow, everyone in my family tree, like, has been divorced or has shown infidelity or struggles with greed or whatnot. You'll start seeing them. And it's the same thing here, right? We do not have a great family tree, right? If we're starting way back in the beginning, we've got blame, we've got anger, we've got murder, we've got favoritism, we've got deception. All of this is just bad. Right? Like,
and adultery.
And adultery, yeah. Or like, and like, here, you can just tell them you're my sister. Like,
yeah.
I don't want them to kill me. Like,
and I'll live with it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. So there's a lot here. And we inherit things from our families. Right? We inherit bad things from our families. Not intentionally. It's not like your mom and dad were like, oh, I can't wait to pass on my sin of lying to everybody. So excited to have a little baby boy to carry up the family tradition of lying, right? Mm-hmm. Most parents are like, this person's going to be better than me, mm-hmm. right? And if we don't do work, right, we won't be. So Joseph is just, you know, he's in his family line and he is acting like his family. Like, that is what Joseph is doing. He is acting the way the world taught him to behave. But then we skip. So Genesis 38 serves the story of Judah and Tamar. And then we skip to Genesis 39, which we don't have time to read all of today. But I do want to focus on this. where this is Joseph. So it says, we go back to Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. First time we get Lord with regards to Joseph, right? And then you have the story of Potiphar's wife and Joseph, right? Where it says now Joseph becomes head over this household, and then the wife is like, "Ooh, you pretty." And Joseph
God
was...
God forbid a woman do anything. Yeah.
Joseph was well-bit and handsome, and after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." Right? And here, I would argue that it is Joseph's, like, trial that changes Joseph, because his response is, "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" First time we have Joseph really acknowledging God.
He went through some stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, Joseph was... It's like, you know, and he starts to recognize it. And he doesn't say, "Sin against my master," right? There's no, "I'm sinning against my master," because you sin against God, right? That's who he sins against. It would be, and he acknowledges that it would be wrong, morally. Like, it would probably hurt my master's feelings, I might lose my household job, etc. But the sin is against God. I can't do that to God. Because, like, I thought I had it all on my own. I thought I had it, like, I had it made. And you know what happened when I did it all on my own? My brothers were going to murder me, and I got sold into slavery. And now I have God. And yes, I might be a slave, but I'm prospering. And, like, things are going pretty well, all things considered. Right? Like, he turns to God. Right? And so, yes, Joseph learns humility through pain. And he learns who God is. And here's the biggest thing about Joseph's story, because Joseph had a choice. We don't see this choice. We don't get to hear about it, which I would love to do. But Joseph has a choice. He's in the cistern. He's being sold into slavery. And he could have gone one of two ways. He could have gone the path of, "Do you see what my brothers did to me? I hate them. I'm going to get revenge." Or, like, "This is all their fault. I've never done anything wrong in my life. I want revenge. I want..." despair.
I want to psychologically torture them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But, like, he could have gone into despair. There's no point anymore. Like, what am I getting out of this life? How many hope? But instead, he turns to God. We don't get to see that moment in Scripture. Mm-mm. But we do see the after effects, because it says the Lord is with him. And the Lord doesn't say the Lord is with him when he's having these dreams. And yes, the Lord probably gave him those dreams, because they end up becoming true. But Joseph isn't giving any credit to God. Joseph are like, "These are my dreams. Look how cool I am." And then, so Joseph, and here's the thing, right? I'm going to skip that for now. When your families hurt you, we have a choice. Continue in bitterness or grow closer to God. That's your choice. Because families hurt us. It's just a fact of life that's been happening since Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. Your families will hurt you. And you can continue to be bitter. You know what? Mom always loved her better than me. She treated her better. Or, like, you know what? I will never forgive him for that. I don't care. You know, he cut me out of his will to spite me, and I'm not forgiving him. Right? Like, we have that choice. Are we going to continue in bitterness? Or are we going to say, "You know what, God? I've been really hurt, but I want to choose you." That's your choice. And it's hard. It's not like, yes, Joseph does, but he's still a slave. Like, yes, Joseph prospers. Things are going better for him, you know. But he's still a slave.
Well, he didn't get to live with his family.
He doesn't get to live with his family. Like, bad things happen. And God eventually redeems the whole situation. And that's Joseph part two. It's coming. But, like, right now, like, but this,
emotional damage.
This is where Joseph turns. Right? He makes the decision of, "I need more than me." Mm-hmm. Because it's real easy to stay in anger. It's real easy to stay in bitterness. But the question is, What are you going to do? Do you want to go to God? Or do you want to stay and drink the poison of bitterness and unforgiveness?
Well, amen. You want to go to God, of course. But
poison!
Cake or death?
You don't talk free, bitch!
Yes.
As long as I can drag someone with me.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
But there's a bitterness that can grow up over time. It's small. It doesn't always have to be thrown in a cistern or sold into slavery.
No,
for sure. It can be just a little bit eating away in a family, and all of a sudden, you've got this cancer.
Well, yeah, it's like there's a proverb, and I forget which culture it comes from, but it's the, it's not the mountain in front of you, it's the pebble in your shoe.
Mm.
And like, you know, because that's what, a pebble in your shoe, if you leave it there.
You can't get up that mountain.
Well, and your foot, you start.
You're going to get an abscess, and your foot's going to fall off.
Yeah, like, it gets real bad, right? And you're like, oh, it's fine. I can just keep walking, right? And it's, but it is. Bitterness and stuff, yes, it's not always like, but it becomes drop, drop, drop. And this is also like when we did emotional.
1,000 cuts.
Yes. Well, when we did emotionally healthy relationships, right? That's why it's so important to speak truth to people and not say, it's okay, when you're like, it's not okay, and I'm really upset about this. Oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I got it. Right? We do that to people. And we slowly grow in bitterness. When really, that's our fault. Right? When we tell someone it's okay and it's not okay, that's on us.
Or surround yourself with people that encourage your bitter. You know what I
mean?
Oh, yeah, you know, you're really right, and they were really wrong, and you deserve that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, you know.
Yeah. Sarah, I saw your hand.
Yeah. It just reminded me of a video I saw explaining microaggressions.
Mm.
And that, you know, that you might not mean it, and it doesn't seem like a big thing to you if you say something, you know, offend somebody accidentally. But a microaggression is like a mosquito bite. One, it's an inconvenience. But if you're encountering it all the time,
mm-hmm.
next thing you know, you're covered in bites and they're all itching.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, that's a really, really great example. And it's like you have a choice of like, you know, are you...
Now you've got malaria.
Yeah. But like, yeah, that's a real
yeah,
thing.
That's exactly,
you know, like,
yeah.
And it turns into that versus like, oh, I have a mosquito bite. Maybe I should move away from the mosquito, treat the bite, and have a better conversation. Or I could just stay here in bitterness, right? So these are important things. And I don't know where you're going for Thanksgiving. I don't know what your family situation is currently like. But I do know that it can be really hard. And it can be really easy. I'm taking him out. I'm not going to listen, you know, the stereotypes. I'm not going to listen to my racist grandma one more time. Or, you know, my creepy grandpa, or whatever it is. You know, those are stereotypes. But, like, I'm making a stand, or whatever. But you're building this up in bitterness instead of love. So, that's it.
And I think, Sue, too, though, you know, because I'm thinking, when we say, there are situations when your family physically hurts you, where you've got to
mm-hmm.
get out of it.
Yes.
And in those situations, well, like Joseph, right? You know, you acknowledge, you still have the choice whether you take that bitterness with you all your life, you know,
mm-hmm.
or if you go to God and you can get healed. You can have healing.
You can. Yes. Anyone. It doesn't matter what your family has done. Healing is available. Okay, we're going to take prayer requests. I'll pull it up.